coming up on this week's Redcast.
This AI and cloud and a cyber problem is really about, is the technology a risk itself?
I've always had my serious doubts about this three lines of defense model.
There isn't just one regulation here. There are literally dozens, if not hundreds.
But you really have no idea who I'm consuming other things from, or what vulnerabilities I might be open to as I give that service to you. And now everybody needs to be an expert in technology. Everybody needs to learn about cybersecurity. Everybody needs to know about resilience.
The more we talk about bad things that happen, the better we can collaborate and kind of start to break down these silos, right?
This is Redcast.
This is Redcast.
Tomorrow's RegTech Radar today. Welcome to Redcast. This is PJ DiGiammarino. I'm CEO and founder of JWG, and I'm really pleased to be continuing season four with episode four. We've moved on from ESG in this episode to start focusing on how technology can be a risk in and of itself, which is really interesting because if you think about it, the previous episodes have been about how do you use technology to help solve for risk. This AI and cloud and a cyber problem is really about, is the technology a risk itself? So there isn't just one regulation here. There are literally dozens, if not hundreds. There's a lot on the radar. I'll update everybody in a minute. But first, let's introduce the panelists, because we thought who better to help explain the incredible complexity in technology and regulations than a MIFID veteran who's an AI expert and a tech guru, a cyber guru who's got real dirt under his fingernails and is an operational resilience guy, and a lawyer. Why don't you start, Monica, with your introduction, please?
Hi, PJ. Good morning, everybody, or afternoon, I suppose, depending where you are. My name is Monica Sasso. I am Red Hat's Global Financial Services Digital Transformation Lead. That's a mouthful. I joined Red Hat from Deutsche Bank Wealth Management, where I was the Deputy Global Head of Reg and Risk Change. And for my sins, I did deliver MIFID 2. I do keep thinking, how long can I say that for? But with MIFID 3 coming around the corner, I feel like I'm much safer at Red Hat, where I can duck and run away from it. Nevertheless, always happy to have a conversation with you, PJ, and with Sam and Simon today. I think it's going to be an interesting chat.
It is the Hotel California. Simon.
Hi there. My name is Simon Newton. I work for a consultancy company by the name of GFT. We specialize in building banks. We are also looking at securing those banks. Before I worked at GFT, I worked for a small company called Microsoft, doing some incident response and things like that. And before that, I worked for another large financial. I'm going to be talking about some of the cybersecurity implications of regulations and the rise of AI.
Thank you. And last but not least.
Last but very much least, Sam Tyfield, partner at Shoe Smith in London, lawyer, and have a background in advising firms which use technology for trading. So again, thoroughly involved in MIFID 2 recently, and previous to that, all of the guidance around systems controls for algorithmic trading firms. Technology lawyer-ish. Nerd.
Well, welcome to the party, Sam, and thank you. Welcome back to Redcast, as Monica has been here before as well. You can find all their back episodes on the whatever player you're listening to this on, or on the JWG website. Let me just give you the quick radar update here, because there's a lot of reg in process. Operational resilience, big term defined a few years ago. Everyone thinks of DORA, which isn't a girl with a knapsack. It's the Digital Operational Resilience Act. It's really here. It's close. I mean, the bell got rung this month in January to put out the final technical standards for half of what we need to do 100 days from now. The next half are coming sometime soon. So you can see it's a bit of a rush to get to implementation. There are literally tens of thousands. The ESA has put out a report talking about 15,000 suppliers in Europe that would be part of this risk chain. Having managed a large procurement organization, I can tell you there's far more than that. But the US and the UK and Australia are really not far behind. There's plenty more happening out there with additional regulation in this space, and everyone's looking to secure how resilient the infrastructure is with a whole bunch of new standards. The EU AI Act is on its way out. We haven't really seen final text. It was agreed. It was a big political compromise right at the end of last year. We are expecting new stuff to come through soon. The US is in process of executing the executive order. We're seeing lots of initiatives flying out, including a recent OMB guidance. The UK has gotten into the game with creating a new safety institute for AI and putting out some NCSC guidelines for that will also apply fairly broadly. And Australia has just put out a large language model framework paper for discussion. And I think Singapore was the last one to check in this month with a 9-point framework on AI. And that's just some of what's going on. In the cloud space, we've had the BIS, the FSI Insight Series come out with a bunch of policy recommendations on managing cloud risk. It talks about new oversights for critical cloud providers and talks about regulatory intervention being needed. Will that mean holding capital? Who knows? And then in the cyberspace, we have a plethora of new regulations, not least the Europe's NIS2, which is all about then changing the plumbing in the way we think about those regulations. And I could go on. I could go from APIs to quantum, but that's just the list of the kind of stuff that's close to here and now. And I think the key point for this discussion today is that these rules are going to get a lot tougher. I mean, this isn't the MiFID outsourcing clause of 2007 that said you had to be able to bring stuff back into the firm to be able to make sure you controlled it. There's still a lot of accountability, there's still a lot of control, but it's recognizing that control lies elsewhere and that some of these risks are really quite large. I mean, let's not lose sight of the fact that, yes, we had to operate without Ion last year, a big outage that affected the market. Yes, the British Library lost its catalog in a ransomware attack. Yes, everyone knows Gen AI can go wrong and put you in trouble. So there are lots of things that have happened within the industry already, and it's only going to get worse. So to me, this is a bit of a dire warning that if we don't start cleaning up our act on these tech safety controls, that we may lose the opportunity to do it ourselves. And there may be big regulatory implications in terms of the amount of capital that some of the tech stack has to hold and how we manage together as an industry. So that's the scene I'd like to set. Let's go to the biggest challenges from our panelists' perspectives, kicking off with Monica. What's your perspective on what it takes this year to start tackling these issues?
Yeah, I'm kind of going to go a little bit down the soft skills route. I think it's actually a lot about culture and education. I think part of this is about, inwards culture and how we make decisions and the speed at which we work. And also how the three lines of defense framework or model reacts and works together in a digital first, very fast world. And I think there's, a little bit of outwards culture as well, right? How the firms work together, how they work with each other, and how they work with their ecosystem, so with their partners. I reckon that, I don't know if I'm allowed to say this, but I reckon that some opening of kimonos might need to happen, to make sure that together we have a resilient economy and a market, for us as consumers, but also for investors in our firms and investors into UK PLC, quite frankly. And I think kind of going along that same vein, it's going to be figuring out how to regulate technology or dare I say, third party critical ICT providers, or even the fourth and the fifth parties.
Yeah, it is such a broad technology chain. There's so many interdependencies you don't even know about, right?
No, exactly. That's what's terrifying, I think, is those fourth and fifth parties, frankly. You might, you know, as a firm, you might say, listen, Monica, you're going to run this service for us, but you really have no idea who I'm consuming other things from.
Yeah.
Or what vulnerabilities I might be open to as I give that service to you. I don't deliver any services for the avoidance of doubt, but.
Yeah. And tell us a bit about how the culture is today. What were some of the things you think, you know, that likely need to change?
I mean, I think the three lines of defense is one of those frameworks that has, you know, put silos in place to ensure that the stability of firms in a world where decisions maybe didn't have to be made instantly. You know, so you might have a requirement out there, you pop it over a wall to somebody else to design and implement. Now we're having decisions that need to be made very, very quickly, and technology is underpinning that. And having to kind of jump through hoops and having this he said, she said, you know, pointing fingers, dare I say, framework, I don't necessarily know that that is conducive to the way that we all work now. And I think also people by nature now are collaborating a whole lot more than we even did 5 years ago, much less 25 years ago. And I also think that framework has probably allowed people to become experts in one thing and one thing only. And now everybody needs to be an expert in technology. Everybody needs to learn about cybersecurity. Everybody needs to know about resilience and all of these topics, not only for your home life, but also for your work life. And yeah, I mean, I do say both, actually. That's where I think we have lots of things that have to change and to be able to react faster and better and safer.
Yeah. And Sam, we've written a bit together on this whole accountability question. How do you come at that?
Well, I have issues with the three lines of defense, even in the traditional markets. I always point back to one of the FCA bulletins where they said, we demand the three lines of defense, but where compliance sits within the three lines of defense is never appropriate as far as we're concerned, because either compliance is too close to the front office and therefore goes native, or it's too far away from the front office, in which case it doesn't understand what it's doing. I have always had my serious doubts about this sort of three lines of defense model, and what I hadn't done was appreciate what Monica has just said, which is it was appropriate for an environment where decisions were made slowly and were compartmentalized. You could hand across. That makes it even worse, and I completely agree with that. Apart from that, PJ, you and I worked on a project coming up to 4 or 5 years ago now, where we tried to look at who should take responsibility internally within firms, or even back then it was AI and machine learning, and think that is going to be a project which we should reignite, because no one can be an expert in everything, even though the senior management rules that are coming through anticipate that the board as a whole takes responsibility. But if you've got everybody has to know what the interdependencies are, who is in the supply chain, that's impossible. So I think the first step should be that industry sits around and determines amongst itself who is best to take lead on all of these projects and all of these risks, so that they can become experts in them and they can talk to their peers in other firms. That will lead to the next point, which is asking the appropriate questions of the regulators and the politicians as to what good enough means and what the eventual outcome will be, whether that is holding extra prudential risk because you're outsourcing to third parties, or it's asking your third parties to hold Prudential Capital, or very simply on the contractual side, what protections you're going to be able to rely on in your contract with your third parties, what data you're going to have access to, whether your regulator is going to have access to them. And coming back, PJ, to your point about the FSI insights thing from the BIS, the Aussie regulators have mooted that data should be available to regulated firms, regulators, demonstrate compliance. And that is going to be a sea change for the tech outsource, the non-regulated tech outsource providers.
Yeah, and I think the 5 years ago, we were talking just to a surveillance crowd, right? It's good because they are using AI ML, and it's one of the places where you actually have traction in terms of saying, well, there is a senior management oversight responsibility for that. That's still a huge problem. And in fact, it's gotten bigger and bigger since, because we look at the $2 billion in fines, last year just from the U.S., so there is potentially an opportunity to pick that particular conversation up, but I think it's also an opportunity to bring it up to the board and to say, look, across the firm, you need to pinpoint this accountability, because we don't have accountability assigned. People don't show up to the meetings. Without a kind of a group, you can't then figure out how to manage it. Simon, how does this manifest itself as an agenda for you?
I think, like Monica mentioned, we need to really start opening up our kimonos and showing the nasty bits of possibly where our security sits. We're starting to see this kind of mentioned in DORA around sort of mandating threat intelligence sharing, those kind of things. We're also seeing it in sort of the exposure of supply chain risk. So the mandatory or mandating a kind of security bill of materials in building software. So from that point of view, the more we talk about bad things that happen, the better we can collaborate and kind of start to break down these silos, right?
What are some of the worst things that are happening that you think we need to be talking about?
So top risks for this year are still kind of ransomware. So ransomware is still very prevalent in the world. People make a lot of money off of it. People are still paying for it. So it's a quick and easy way to make a buck. The other thing, this being an election year in sort of multiple largest countries like the UK and the US, I think with the use of AI, we've got quite a steep rise in misinformation. OpenAI and sort of ChatGPT are putting things in place to disclose when misinformation is potentially being used there. So these kind of things also kind of contribute to phishing. So phishing is also a very large risk that is still prevalent. These are the kind of things that we need to be looking out for.
Yeah, and I guess that just one great example of how serious the threats are. The threat assessments are through the roof, especially given the global environment, and the number of actors that are now state sponsored and making serious attacks on the infrastructure. You can't take that lightly. Sam, from your perspective, like if you're in the boardroom, what are some of those digital risks that you're advising them to pay attention to?
Well, the truth is that the focus is not that narrow. Again, back to Monica's very good point about soft skills. The focus is on operational resilience, which is much, much broader than AI or cyber risk, and that encompasses everything. It encompasses culture and conduct and remuneration and internal investigations and procurement. So I'm coming at it from the awful word holistic perspective, and then sort of dividing as we go down into the silos of each of the constituent parts of what makes up operational resilience. But within that, keep going back to the contractual obligations. So it's all very well X company owing a regulatory duty or a quasi-regulatory duty to a third-party regulator who will give them a rap on the knuckles if they don't deliver. That is very different from owing a contractual obligation to a customer for delivering the same thing. And this goes double for where you have overseas service providers who are outside your jurisdiction or outside your regulator's jurisdiction, or you have very large incumbent providers who, I won't use the word oligopoly, but you know, there are few outsourced service providers who will automatically get a seat at the pitch table. And they can still, to a very large extent, dictate the terms on which they're prepared to provide the services. That is going to have to change.
Yeah.
And that
to me is the great thing about this BIS report. It sort of, I think, will start opening the forcing a bit of international kimono opening, because you can't go back to Cupertino, California and tell them you want to change the terms.
No. The flip side to that, unfortunately, is that it is not inducive to a disruptive or innovative environment, because small firms, startups, are not going to have the resources to provide this on their own, which means that it's a vicious circle. The only firms who can deliver will be the massive multinationals, and those firms which could provide useful, unique bolt-ons to your systems, but happen to have just gone through a Series A or a Series B round, are not going to be able to do that, which means they can't be in play.
Yeah.
That's a much broader discussion about capital markets and innovation and R&D. But
let's get Monica's perspective on that. I need to come off mute, and Monica, and tell us a bit about what it's like with your customers, because you have some massive customers, and I'm sure plenty of smaller ones. What are you hearing from them?
I think Sam articulated it perfectly right. It's getting that balance, because you don't want to reduce competition within the smaller firms and the bigger firms, and you almost have to have a sliding scale of what operational resilience is. And I was thinking about this the other day, is there a possibility to have a sliding scale for operational resilience depending on how big of a player you are, right? And I think the answer is yes, and the answer is no, because it's very complicated, to Sam's point, right? I think we're all probably saying the exact same thing, maybe slightly differently. It's a very complex environment. Nobody's had to think about it. It's homegrown over time. It's been developed in silos. Lots of spaghetti that's now sort of being duct taped together, a little bit of blue tack in between. And how do you unpick that to make sure that you can survive? And I almost think you have to kind of, because it's such a big and complex story, you almost have to start from, okay, how can I serve? What do I need to do to survive, rather than how do I unpick this mess and become more resilient? And you then have to be taken back to a principal's point, and then work backwards from there. But saying all of that, that's nice on paper. But the reality of it is, these threats are coming. And Simon is right. We are in an election year, not only in the UK and America, but what is it? Something like 60% of democracies around the world are voting this year. That's incredible. India, I think, is voting. You've got lots of countries in Europe are voting. France is voting. We have the stuff going on in the EU with the presidency. It's fun. I should know this better, because I love listening to other geopolitical podcasts. I won't shout them out.
You just suggest we're a geopolitical podcast.
No, but you know, there's only so much time in the day, PJ.
Yeah, exactly.
Not everybody cares about this topic like we do. More people care about what's going on in the world than this, although this is actually very important, because then it takes us down lots of other different rabbit holes. I think when I talk to customers and they talk about cloud adoption and all of this stuff, I think two things are patterns I've seen, right? Is one, you have a lot of this cloud adoption and technology adoption still happening in the bowels of the basement. And it's a lot of it is driven by how do we clean up the past, right? Which makes perfect sense, because if you have a solid base to grow from, then you can start to secure and protect a lot of the threats that Simon is talking about. And I know that you all advise people on as well. And I think the second one is it is really just a fundamental shift. This is a fundamental shift in how we run businesses now. And how can they define an operating model? How can firms define an operating model that is safe, that is, you know, when nobody's used the word sovereignty, but, you know, fiscal sovereignty is a real thing, right? It's a real concern. It's all of your eggs in one basket. And this is a real, it's almost an academic challenge. And I don't know that people have given themselves the space to answer it, because they're too busy looking at how can we fix the legacy IT so that we can compete with the next competitor, or be there for the next big thing, or be there to service our customers in the way that they expect to be serviced. So I think we're moving out into this space of trying to find balance in all of these competing priorities.
Yeah, and this is the typical part of the regulatory implementation cycle where you see just the narrowing of the focus. Okay, I've got some standards. I got to check those boxes and move on. What you're arguing is actually it's a really, really big problem, and we need to step back and think about it. Simon, how is this manifesting itself with your client?
Yeah, so what we're seeing is, like Monica said, people have kind of lifted and shifted a bunch of stuff to the cloud. They now need to get a handle on what that means to them from a soft skills perspective. We're getting a lot of customers who are kind of coming to us and asking, how do they modernize their operational security in general? How do they take advantage of sort of cloud-based technologies? How do they protect against the larger attack surface? I think regulations are starting to kind of address some of these things, provide a bit of guidance, but a lot of the time, larger customers still don't really understand how advantage of sort of AI and ML and the sort of scale of data that they're now receiving from cloud platform, and trying to find the bad stuff that's happening in this kind of deluge of data, right? So what we're kind of focusing on in GFT this year is how to modernize your operational, your security operations, how to take advantage of these newer technologies, and how to protect yourself against sort of bad things that might happen by making use of AI and sort of language models and things like that.
Yeah, I think you raise an excellent point, which is that there is a reward here. It's not all risk, you know, in that there,
yeah.
There's tons of business value to be generated by sorting some of this out as well. And I think that's maybe part of what helps drag this out of the bowels, as Monica put it, you know, and make it more of a holistic top down, as Sam put it. And I really like that. I really like that theme. So speaking of themes, let's come to our closing statements now, because there's just so much we could go on talking about, but we have a full hour on stage in a full day at our 7th of February annual conference to be talking about. Let's go through just one by one and say, well, what problems will conference registrants learn how to solve if they're joining us, and what are they going to get out of it? Maybe starting with you, Monica.
I'm going to try to be simple here, because I don't think this is an easy topic. I think it's where to start. And what the real focus should be based on your firm's current, you know, risk appetite and where you are in your modernization strategy. It's figuring out where to start is probably a whole lot better than just buying some fancy new shiny toys. So is it AI, is it data, or is it operational resilience more broadly? I also hope that people are going to take away some myth busting, or we will do some myth busting and be able to give folks some tips on how we can collectively do this as an industry together with all of the ecosystem players rather than everybody, you know, sort of do their homework on their own.
Great points. And I think there's also, in terms of then future painting, future pathways in terms of how can open source help and those kinds of things.
Exactly. And that's that collaboration point. You know, I think that's where then you can start to standardize certain things. You can have, you know, nomenclature, and the more standardization and simplicity we have in some of these complex topics, the easier it is to protect them from cyber attacks, for example.
I'm really pleased we're going to have a couple folks from the open source community there with us
talking about
what some of their agenda items are. So that's a little bit, really looking forward to that. Simon, what are your key messages?
On our panel, it'd be great to talk about how we can help people to overcome some of these regulatory pressures and make them more secure, really. I think to Monica's point, having some way to start is great. Having a way forward is probably the next step, right? Like you said, there's been a lot of change over the last year, and there's even more change coming. And having a roadmap or a way forward through all of this change in a secure kind of way, I think will be, you know, invaluable to people.
Yeah. I think there's a sense of priorities that I get from listening to you talk. I mean, literally there are hundreds of regulations you could talk about. And that's part of the challenge. I've had to boil them down into some thematics of which there are many, you know, intricate complexities. People talk about, you know, the NIST 805 and these, you know, these scary sounding document numbers and those kind of things. So, you know, ultimately, we're just trying to simplify it, bring it into a coherent discussion for those that don't want to spend, you know, their lives reading 800 pages a day. But that brings us to our lawyer, Sam. What is your hope and wish for the conference registrants?
Well, you kind of stole my thunder with priorities, because my headline was, what I'm hoping people take away is how to do more with less. Because everybody has less at the moment. There are smaller budgets, fewer people. People are being asked to do more in their day-to-day jobs. And I think to the priority point, we are all going to have to try and do more with less. Although, don't scrimp on your legal fees. That's very, very important.
Or use a cheap lawyer.
there's no such thing as a cheap lawyer. There's a good lawyer or a bad lawyer. That's what I'm hoping people will be able to get some comfort about, is it's not, they're not going to have to spend huge amounts of money and make enormous infrastructure governance changes. They can work with what they've got in order to get where they need to be. A little bit of rationality to the whole thing.
Yeah. Well, look, those are all great points. I'll only just add that the best way to get some free insight if you're in a firm is to register for the conference, because then you can just listen to what Sam has to have and not pay him. But ultimately, you know, this is going to be a great crowd, great discussion. We have 24 different panelists across the day, and a fantastic opportunity to check out some technology solutions, talk to some people who really know what's going on, and help figure it all out. We're really looking forward to continuing the infrastructure risk conversation and figuring out where it goes this year. Plenty of research that we have up on the conference website, which is regtechconference.co.uk. And we will be able to obviously put some links in the show notes that will take you to that. And just knock yourself out. There's lots of good reading, lots of publications going on in advance. And let us know on LinkedIn what you think. And looking forward to continuing the dialogue. But this leaves me to close this podcast and thank you all for your fantastic insights.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. And if you've enjoyed the content, please like us so more people can join the conversation. Download all our episodes via all the major platforms. Come to the JWG website, which is jwg-it.eu, and follow our LinkedIn groups.